Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1158. BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now, part 18. An Ounce of Prevention, part 3. This is being recorded on October 25th of the year 2020. We are going to plunge right in with the reading of an article that occupied the bulk, the reading of which occupied the bulk of our last program. We are once again plunging into our interview, our exploration of programs that were devised to prevent epidemics or pandemics, and noting that the distinction between, quote, offensive, unquote, and, quote, defensive, unquote, biological warfare research is academic, we are asking ourselves whether perhaps some of these epidemic prevention programs are either fronts for or masking a sub-entity that is in fact involved in epidemic or pandemic propagation. This is in the context of the Lancet magazine, a prestigious British medical magazine, launching a COVID-19 commission, which will be headed by Dr. Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K, of the EcoHealth Alliance, and also will feature Jeffrey Sachs, an economist who has no scientific or medical credentials whatsoever. He was the chief architect of the destruction of the Russian economy under Boris Yeltsin, having worked in that regard as the head of the Harvard Institute for International Development, which was funded in part by the U.S. government. Daszak is a major exponent of gain-of-function manipulations on potential pandemic creating organisms, and has been a vociferous advocate of genetically mutating many of these organisms to see if they can infect human beings, as we have seen, and as we will continue to see. His EcoHealth Alliance is heavily networked with not only the Pentagon, but with other national security organizations. And I think it is a very fair question to ask whether that organization, EcoHealth Alliance, or some subset of that is in fact involved with biological warfare research, epidemic creation rather than prevention. It does not take many people in the context of biological warfare to successfully realize such a covert operation. The article that we have been reading from is called Peter Show Me the Money, Daszak pulls in big bucks to EcoHealth Alliance for risky virus, quote, research, unquote, and it is offered by Alexis Bodden Mayer. It is from About Magazine from September 19th of 2020. And Alexis Bodden Mayer is the director. I will pull up once again to review her credentials here. She is the political director for the Organic Consumers Association. And again, this is from About Magazine of September 19th of 2020. To give you an idea of some of the information that really should perk up the radar of an objective observer, it was the EcoHealth Alliance, along with the Wuhan Institute of Virology and Dr. Ralph Barrich of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, financed in part by the U.S. Agency for International Development, a common front for CIA activity. And in 2015, they genetically mutated a SARS-like virus and made it basically able to infect human beings. And it was a new bat SARS-like virus that can jump directly from its bat host's to Humans. And this was published in 2015 in Nature magazine. And this was after the moratorium was declared on gain-of-function manipulations. And one of the things that is so suspicious about this is described in this article by Alexis Baden-Mayer. The work, quote, "A SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses shows potential for human emergence," published in Nature in 2015 during the National Institute of Health's moratorium on gain-of-function research, was grandfathered in because it was initiated before the moratorium, officially called the U.S. Government Deliberative Process Research Funding Pause on Selected Gain-of-Function Research Involving Influenza, MERS, and SARS viruses, and because the request by Xi and Barish to continue their research during the moratorium was approved by the NIH. Now listen to this. "As a condition of publication, Nature magazine, like most scientific journals, requires authors to submit new DNA and RNA sequences to GenBank," that's capital G-E-N, capital B-A-N-K, "the U.S. National Center for Biotechnology Information Database. Yet, the new SARS-like virus Xi and Barish created wasn't deposited in GenBank until May of 2020. That's 5 years later and well into the pandemic. The brilliant Berkeley researcher Peter Dale Scott has noted that the cover-up will obviate the conspiracy. And it is, I think, very suspicious, frankly, that 5 years elapsed between this, the manipulation of this virus, its publication in Nature, and the submission of the genome to the GenBank in May of 2020, well after the pandemic was underway in this country. The question is, why? And there are a lot of other very interesting questions to be asked about EcoHealth Alliance and the work they've done. This article, as I said in our previous program, exemplifies why I think it is very important for listeners to use the written descriptions for these programs. This will be, the entire article is included in the written description that will be published for the record 1158. And I emphatically encourage listeners to use that description. And skipping down into Alexis Baden-Mayer's article, we are going to overlap the reading of text in this program with the text we read in our last program. This is a section called EcoHealth's Tentacles Reach Far and Wide. EcoHealth Alliance is very much involved in the Pentagon's proliferation of high-containment biological laboratories. It is conducting DTRA-funded work, by the way, that's the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, developed to remove the biological warfare capabilities of unstable or collapsing regimes. It has instead been used for propagating those capabilities. Beginning again, it is conducting DTRA-funded work in the following countries, which are all participants in the Pentagon's Biological Threat Reduction Program. Tanzania. In Tanzania, a country that is considered only partly free, unquote, which has a history of foreign medical experimentation and which did not ratify the Biological Weapons Convention until 2019, EcoHealth Alliance has a $5 million Pentagon contract, quote, "Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, reducing an emerging health threat in Tanzania." Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, or CCHF, is a tick-borne disease originally only infecting animals that was discovered by Otis, that's with two keys, and Callista Causey, C-A-U-S-E-Y, while working for the Rockefeller Foundation in Nigeria. There was only one previous case of CCHF in Tanzania, And that was in 1986. Parenthetically, note that this is a tick-borne disease. The research done by Chris Newby on Lyme disease that we accessed in For the Record programs 1135, 1136, and 1137 should be considered in the context of the Crimean-Congo hemorrhagic fever. Continuing. Gain-of-function research on CCHF is being conducted at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Bio and Agro-Defense Facility, or NBAF, to determine, quote, the mechanisms of CCHF transmission, including development of CCHF tick and animal infection methods and CCHF tick animal transmission models, unquote. The National Bio and Agri-Defense Facility will take over the mission of the Plum Island Animal Disease Center and become the lead facility for foreign animal disease research. By the way, Lab 257, a very important book about Plum Island and its work on biological warfare. At one point, the research there was being heavily overseen by Dr. Eric Traub, a Nazi war criminal who was brought over to the U.S. Under the auspices of Project Paperclip. And continuing. By the way, bear in mind, too, that there was only one previous case of CCHF in Tanzania, and that was in 1986. So why is all of this research being done on this disease, and why the gain-of-function research, genetically mutating the organism that creates it? That, again, is, I think, frankly, suspicious. Continuing, the National Bio and Agri-Defense Facility Biosafety Level 4, or BSL-4, zoonotic and emerging infectious disease team's CCHF virus surveillance project is investigating, quote, the interface between tick vectors, livestock, and pastoralist and resource-poor farming communities in Tanzania, as well as the disease's, quote, molecular pathogenesis, unquote. Tanzania is the origin of chikungunya, C-H-I-K-U-N-G-U-N-Y-A, a mosquito-borne virus that the U.S. has long cultivated as a potential biological weapon, according to a patent held by the University of Texas for a, quote, chimeric, unquote, chikungunya virus created through genetic engineering and synthetic biology. The 13th quote, the 39 documented laboratory infections reported by HHS in 1981 strongly suggest that chikungunya virus is infectious via aerosol route. Chikungunya virus was being weaponized by the U.S. Army when the offensive program was terminated, unquote. Tanzania is one of the countries where bat coronaviruses were collected from the PREDICT project. Again, the EcoHealth Alliance is involved with that, and part of the funding comes from the U.S. Agency for International Development, the common CIA front. It is more than just a CIA front, but it has been frequently used by CIA for biological warfare. For I should say, covert operations. Continuing. Tanzania has one biosafety level 3 or BSL-3 laboratory, the privately owned Ifakara Health Institute, which is partnering with PREDICT to launch, quote, concurrent surveillance of wildlife and people in at-risk areas for viral spillover and spread, unquote. South Africa. In South Africa, which had a notorious apartheid-era biological weapons program, EcoHealth Alliance has a $5 million Pentagon contract running from 2019 to 2024, quote, reducing the threat of Rift Valley fever through ecology, epidemiology, and socioeconomics, unquote. This is on top of a $4.9 million grant running from 2014 to 2019, quote, understanding Rift Valley fever in the Republic of South Africa, unquote. The last human outbreak of Rift Valley fever in South Africa occurred in 2010 when the government reported 237 confirmed cases, including 26 deaths from 9 provinces. But there were also a few cases in 2018 among farm workers who slaughtered infected animals during an outbreak in livestock. The fever can spread from animals to humans if they come in contact with the blood and other body fluids of an infected animal. The U.S. military has conducted offensive biological weapons research on Rift Valley fever. South Africa's biological weapons program included the weaponization of Rift Valley fever virus obtained by the U.S. government. Known as Project Coast, South Africa's biological weapons program murdered anti-apartheid activists with narcotics and poisons, and attempted a genocide of the black majority by spreading AIDS and by developing pathogens and vaccines that would selectively attack black people with illness, death, and infertility. Dr. Wouter Basson, the first name W-O-U-T-E-R, last name B-A-S-S-O-N, Project Coast's top scientist, told Pretoria High Court in South Africa that the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency threatened him with death, presumably to prevent him from revealing the deep connections between Project Coast and the U.S., which had forced President F.W. de Klerk to shut down the project and destroy its records. Basson named the U.S. Centers for Disease Control as his source of 8 shipments of Ebola, Marburg, and Rift Valley viruses, but claimed that he had obtained the viruses by posing as a medical researcher and hiding his affiliation with the South African Defense Forces. Surveys of bats in South Africa found no evidence of bats being natural carriers of Rift Valley fever virus, but experiments have shown that bats can be infected with it in a laboratory setting. A bat coronavirus collected in South Africa in 2011 was thought to be the closest known relative of the MERS CoV virus that emerged in Saudi Arabia in 2012 until a 100% match for MERS CoV was detected by Bazak and his colleagues in viral RNA fragments from an Egyptian tomb bat found near the home of one of the first MERS victims in Saudi Arabia. Liberia. In Liberia, which didn't ratify the Biological Weapons Convention until 2016, EcoHealth Alliance has a $4.91 million Pentagon contract, quote, reducing the threat from high-risk pathogens causing febrile illness in Liberia, unquote. Febrile illnesses include Ebola, which has been the subject of some of the most controversial dual-use research. While the U.S. has a sordid history of biological weapons experimentation on its own people, with conscientious objectors, military, quote, volunteers, unquote, and the general public as frequent subjects, there were some biological weapons tests the Department of Defense considered too unethical to perform within the continental U.S. Those tests were conducted in other countries, including Liberia. Likewise, mirroring medical experimentation on African Americans, there is a history of colonial medical experimentation in Liberia going back to 1926, when the Firestone Tire Company financed surveys of local diseases they feared could curtail the profitability of their rubber plantations. More recently, a failed Pentagon-funded Ebola drug trial caused many Liberians to suspect that the subsequent Ebola outbreak was the fault of Tecmira, T-E-K-M-I-R-A, the pharmaceutical company that created TKM-100802. Doubt surrounded the official story promoted by Bazak that the West African Ebola outbreak happened because bats flew in with the Ebola Zaire virus from 2,500 miles away. In January of 2014, the Phase 1 trial for TKM-100802 was launched, but put on clinical hold by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration due to high cytokine release in participants. In a dose escalation healthy volunteer study, one of two participants dosed at the highest level of 0.5 milligrams per kilogram experienced cytokine release syndrome. cytokine release syndrome is a pro-inflammatory reaction that occurs when activated lymphocytes and or myeloid cells release soluble immune mediators following administration of certain therapeutic agents, especially monoclonal antibodies. Onset can be rapid within hours of administration and can be life-threatening. Ultimately, PKM100802 proved useless for Ebola patients, but the Pentagon's $140 million investment and the boost Tecmyra's stock experience on speculation that Ebola would soon spawn the next $1 billion drug made many investors rich. Parenthetically, this sounds a little bit like Gilead Sciences and Remdesivir and COVID-19. Continuing. Suspicions were raised because the PKM100802 Phase 1 trial on healthy volunteers began in January of 2014 before the first cases of the Ebola outbreak in March of 2014. This one more time. Suspicions were raised, I'm not going to imagine they would be, because the PKM100802 Phase 1 trial on healthy volunteers began in January of 2014 before the first cases of the Ebola outbreak in March of 2014. Later, the World Health Organization's Pierre Formenty, capital F-O-R-M-E-N-T-Y, traced the first case back to late December of 2013 in Milyandu, Guinea. There, 50 meters from the home of patient zero, another researcher, Fabian Leenders, L-W-E-N-D-E-R-T-Z, found DNA fragments that matched the Angolan free-tailed bat, a species known to survive experimental infections with Ebola. Then, DAZAC's EcoHealth team found viral RNA fragments of Ebola Zaire in a greater long-fingered bat captured in 2016 in Liberia's Sonekel Mon district, which borders Guinea. There was a 1982 article in Annals of Virology in which a trio of Germans reported finding Ebola antibodies in 26 of 433 Liberians, or 6%. And the next section, bats aren't the only place to look for Ebola. There is a BSL-4 lab that was handling Zaire Ebola before the pandemic in Kemima, K-E-M-E-M-A, Sierra Leone. This is where international law attorney Francis Boyle, a drafter of the U.S. Biological Weapons and Anti-Terrorism Act passed into law in 1981, believes the pandemic originated. There's also Liberia's Monkey Island. As the Washington Post reported, that's where 66 chimpanzees have been since 2004, when they were abandoned by the American scientists at the Liberian labs of the New York Blood Center. From 1974 to 2004, the New York Blood Center captured wild chimps, engaged them in medical experimentation, and then released them back into the jungle in a project known as Vi-Lab 2 or Virology Lab 2, which maintained a colony of 200 chimps. Vi-Lab 2 was built from the remnants of the Liberian Institute of Tropical Medicine. Built by Firestone in 1946, the Liberian Institute of Tropical Medicine had once employed 60 scientists. But by 1974, medical doctor Earl Reber, R-E-B-E-R, was there alone with 8 chimps. The roots of the Liberian Institute of Tropical Medicine go back to the research begun in 1926 by Harvard Department of Tropical Medicine Chief Richard Pearson Strong. Virus hunters like Bezac should have a keen interest in a population of chimpanzees that for nearly 100 years has been caught, injected with viruses, and then released back into the wild, especially considering the work of the researchers who handled the chimps. The New York Blood Center is at the center of a theory on the origin of HIV/AIDS that it came from a contaminated hepatitis B vaccine the center distributed to gay men from 1978 to 1981. The New York Blood Center has also tested its vaccine on, Liberians. Richard Pearson Strong is famous for killing 13 men when he infected a group of 24 inmates of Manila's Bilibid prison, that's B-I-L-I-B-I-D, with plague through a contaminated cholera vaccine. That was prior to his work in Liberia, which is only now being explored and also involved experiments with humans as well as chimpanzees. Georgia. By the way, that is the country that was a former member of the Soviet Union, not Georgia as in Georgia on My Mind by Ray Charles. Georgia. EcoHealth Alliance has a $6.5 million Pentagon grant for, quote, understanding the risk of bat-borne zoonotic disease emergence in Western Asia, 2017-2022. ArmsWatch reports that this grant involves genetic studies on coronaviruses in 5,000 bats collected in Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Jordan. The studies were conducted at the Lugar Center, a $161 million Pentagon-funded biolaboratory in Georgia's capital, Tbilisi. Russia claims the Georgia lab is on the site of a U.S. biological weapons. Beginning again. Russia claims the Georgia lab is the site of a U.S. biological weapons program. According to USAspending.gov, EcoHealth Alliance has received $2.88 million in grants for work in Georgia. The Lugar Center, L-U-G-A-R, is one of the labs that hosts EcoHealth Alliance's Western Asian Bat Research. Malaysia. In Malaysia, which is only now in the process of creating a legislative framework for enforcing the Biological Weapons Convention, EcoHealth Alliance had a $1.6 million Pentagon grant from 2017 to 2019 for, quote, serological biosurveillance for spillover of hemipaviruses and filoviruses at agricultural and hunting human beginning again, this is quite a mouthful. Oh, by the way, the spelling before I reread this sentence. Hemipavirus, I may be mispronouncing, H-E-M-I-P-A-V-I-R-U-S, and filovirus, F-I-L-O-V-I-R-U-S. Malaysia. In Malaysia, which is only now in the process of creating a legislative framework for enforcing the Biological Weapons Convention, EcoHealth Alliance had a $1.6 million Pentagon contract from 2017 to 2019 for, quote, serological biosurveillance for spillover of hemipaviruses and filoviruses at agricultural and hunting human-animal interfaces in peninsular Malaysia, unquote. There are no known cases of filovirus infections in humans in Malaysia. Again, as with the CCHF in Tanzania, there was only one case. That was in 1986, so why are they doing gain-of-function research on that particular virus? And again, note this. The program is called Serological Biosurveillance for Spillover of Hemipaviruses and Filoviruses at Agricultural and Hunting Human-Animal Interfaces in Peninsular Malaysia, unquote. There are no known cases of filovirus infections in humans in Malaysia. But Malaysia is the origin of the Nipah virus, that's N-I-P-A-H, first recognized in 1999 during an outbreak among farmers and farm workers in factory farms and slaughterhouses producing pork. The virus spread to Singapore. In all, there were 265 cases of acute encephalitis with 105 deaths, and the billion-dollar pig farming industry nearly collapsed. No new outbreaks have been reported in Malaysia since 1999. And again, the Pentagon contract for EcoHealth Alliance is 2017 to 2019. Continuing. Nipavirus, again, N-I-P-A-H, a zoonotic pathogen for which no treatments exist, is the inspiration for the film Contagion. The virus can only be experimented on in BSL-4 laboratories. The National Bio and Agro-Defense Facility in Kansas will be the first biocontainment facility in the U.S. where research on Nipah and Ebola, a filovirus, can be conducted on livestock. In 2019, Nipah Malaysia was among the deadly virus strains shipped from Canada's National Microbiology Lab to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Honeypaviruses in the paramyxovirus family, that's paramyxovirus, one more time, honeypaviruses in the paramyxovirus family were the first emerging diseases linked to bats. In June of 2012, in the same Chinese cave, actually an old copper mine where workers doing cleanup had become sick and died, in which Dazac's WIV colleagues found SARS-CoV-2's most closely related coronavirus, another frequent collaborator of Dazac's, Zhiqiang Wu, of the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences, found a new honeypavirus-like pathogen in a rat, naming it the Mojang paramyxovirus after the county in Yunnan province where it was found. Malaysia was the plant site of a BSL-4 laboratory run by the pharmaceutical company Emergent Biosolutions for the production of a halal version of the BioThrax vaccine, but that project failed. In addition to the Pentagon funding, Dazac obtained $1.7 million in grants from 2002 to 2005 from NIH's Fogarty International Center for Anthropogenic Change and Emerging Zoonotic Paramyxoviruses. In 2012 to 2014, Dazac had a $569,700 grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Service for, quote, development of a great ape health unit in Sabah, Malaysia. That's S-A-B-A-H. Dazac has a new National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases grant, quote, understanding risk of zoonotic virus emergence in EID hotspots of Southeast Asia for $1.5 million, and that was in 2020. The grant is for, and quote, Emerging Infectious Diseases Southeast Asia Research Collaboration Hub, or EID Search, that, quote, brings leaders in emerging disease research from the U.S., Thailand, Singapore, and the three major Malaysian administrative regions together to build an early warning system to safeguard against pandemic disease threats. This team will identify novel viruses from Southeast Asian wildlife and characterize their capacity to infect and cause illness in people. Other Pentagon contracts. EcoHealth Alliance had a $1 million Pentagon contract from 2017 to 2019 for an inbound bio-event information system, or IBIS, quote, a web-based application and early warning system for global infectious disease bio-events to threaten the U.S. via international transportation networks, unquote. EcoHealth Alliance also had another $4.5 million Pentagon contract for 2015 to 2017, categorized HDTRA 115COO41. No other information is available on this contract other than it is for, quote, applied research exploratory development, unquote, in the, again quoting, physical, engineering, and life sciences, except biotechnology, unquote. Department of Homeland Security contract. EcoHealth Alliance has a $566,300 contract from 2019 to 2021 with the Department of Homeland Security for the rapid evaluation of pathogens to prevent epidemics in livestock or repel project, quote, to apply biological-based pathogen-agnostic medical countermeasure vaccine and diagnostic platforms to develop foreign animal and emerging zoonotic livestock disease vaccines, unquote. Department of Health and Human Services funding. BASAC obtained a $300,000 grant in 2012 from NIH's Fogarty International Center for Research on, quote, comparative spillover dynamics of avian influenza in endemic countries, unquote. While most of the research listed in the results section of the grant are flu-related, it also includes the WIV's paper, Isolation and Characterization of a Bat SARS-like Coronavirus that Uses the ACE2 Receptor. Again, very interesting. One more time, this last couple of sentences. Department of Health and Human Services funding. BASAC obtained a $300,000 grant in 2012 from the National Institutes of Health Fogarty, that's F-O-G-A-R-T-Y, International Center for Research on, quote, comparative spillover dynamics of avian influenza in endemic countries, unquote. While most of the research listed in the results section of the grant are flu-related, it also includes the WIV's paper, Isolation and Characterization of a Bat SARS-like Coronavirus that Uses the ACE2 Receptor. BASAC was given $3.7 million in grants from 2002 to 2012 from the NIH's Fogarty International Center for, quote, the Ecology, Emergence, and Pandemic Potential of Nipah Virus in Bangladesh, unquote. The grants BASAC used to support the work of the WIV were a $3.7 million grant from 2014 to 2020, understanding the risk of bat coronavirus emergence, and a $2.6 million grant from 2008 to 2012, quote, risk of viral emergence from bats, unquote, each from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. U.S. Agency for International Development funding. In Thailand, EcoHealth Alliance had a $647,200 grant for One Health Workforce Next Generation 2019-2020. And as we have seen in the past, USAID also was a key American funder of the EcoHealth Alliance that was a joint project with the WIV, and under the auspices of which Ralph Barich helped to genetically alter a SARS-like virus and make it infectable and make it infectious for human diseases. That were for human beings, I should say. That is the experiment I alluded to earlier. We have spoken about that in many programs. Why did it take 5 years for the publication of that experiment in Nature magazine until the information was entered into the appropriate GenBank database in May of 2020? That is very, very suspicious. Now, again, obviously, EcoHealth Alliance has the most profound connections to the U.S. National Security Establishment, probably many others. I want to remind people again that the Pentagon is in the business of war fighting. They are not in the business of protecting human health. Obviously, if you're going to be sending troops into foreign countries, you want to be able to protect your troops. But the U.S. isn't invading Tanzania and all of these other countries, at least not yet. One of the things that we looked at from the book Gene Wars from 1988 was biotechnology expert Jonathan King's observation that offensive biological warfare research being conducted by the Pentagon was being masked under vaccine research. I think the question necessarily has to be asked about EcoHealth Alliance. And again, it may well be that the vast majority of the people involved with EcoHealth Alliance and these programs are absolutely sincere. But once you have the genetic information for a gain of function manipulation on an organism, and once that is published, any virus can be synthesized from scratch in a laboratory using contemporary technology, which is somewhat analogous to the 3D printer, in which one can make a working firearm using a 3D printer. I suspect that the WIV, that was China's first BSL-4 laboratory, was basically stung. I think they were being set up. Almost we could think of it as the Wuhan Institute of Virology Oswald, and they were being set up as a patsy for this covert operation, or the COVID operation, so to speak. Again, bear in mind that the COVID-19 epidemic or pandemic takes place in the context of a multidimensional full-court press against China with National Endowment for Democracy covert operations in Hong Kong, in Xinjiang province involving the Uyghurs. We see OUNB Nazi elements decamping to Hong Kong courtesy of EU-sponsored NGOs. We see the Captive Nations Committee and people like Adrian Zenz spawning operations and propaganda vis-a-vis the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province. And the trade war with China garners new headlines almost every day. And yet the blinders that people have on have so far anyway, obscured the view of these particular events. Now, again, in the Telegraph article with which we began our program yesterday, or in our previous program, actually did record that on October 24th, that article, scientists to examine possibility of COVID, the possibility COVID leaked from lab as part of investigation into virus origins by Paul Nuki, N-U-K-I, and Sarah Nui. This is from the Telegraph of September 15th of 2020. I believe that is the British Telegraph. I think the Australian paper, the Murdoch paper, is the Daily Telegraph. In any event, to have someone like Peter Daszak, with all of the connections that we have spoken about, heading up such a commission is, I think, more than a little interesting. It remains to be seen what they come up with. I would bet a large sum of money, and I'm not a gambler, that they will rule out U.S. research being involved in the creating of a virus of the SARS CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19. They may or may not say, "Yep, it looks like it did come from a Chinese laboratory." So far, the establishment line, to coin a phrase, on SARS-CoV-2 is that it did not come from a laboratory. My guess is that that is what Peter Daszak and his commission will conclude. It is, again, worth noting that Peter Daszak and his EcoHealth Alliance have the most profound connections to Pentagon and other U.S. national security agencies. They have Pentagon research contracts in many different countries. Again, when you have something like the CCHF, a tick-borne disease that has had only one case in Tanzania, that in 1986, more than almost 35 years ago, that would appear to be a very unusual focal point for such research. And then to take that organism, that virus, and subject it to gain-of-function manipulations is, I think, suspicious. Also noting the speculation engaged in by that author, Alexis Baden-Mayer, that the New York Blood Center may have been involved with contaminated viruses in For the Record, program number 16, an interview that we did with Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Ed Haslam, the author of AIDS and the Doctors of Death. I've forgotten his name off the top of my head. But again, it is a three-hour interview with those doctors. Alan Cantwell is his name. And also a couple of doctors who were looking into the Gulf War syndrome. And after their daughter, who had been a helicopter pilot in Saudi Arabia, came home with COVID-19, but with Gulf War syndrome, people's family members and their pets were contracting Gulf War syndrome, which appears to have been produced by a mycoplasma that was genetically engineered using the envelope gene from the AIDS virus. Again, For the Record 16 goes into that. It was Drs. Garth and Nancy Nicholson who conducted that research. Now, something that is more than a little interesting, and that concerns the another key member of this Lancet COVID-19 Commission from the Telegraph article. The wider Lancet COVID-19 Commission is being chaired by Professor Jeffrey Sachs, an eminent American economist and advisor to the UN. He will oversee the investigation not just into the origins of virus, but the world's reaction to it in order to make recommendations for strengthening pandemic preparedness globally. This, I think, is very interesting and frankly suspicious because Professor Jeffrey Sachs has no scientific or medical credentials whatsoever that I can see. He is an economist, and we have dealt with him in the past. Jeffrey Sachs was the head of the HIIB, the Harvard Institute of International Development, funded in part by, drumroll fanfare, the U.S. government. They were, as Doug Henwood, an economic researcher whom we will discuss in a minute, said, was to Boris Yeltsin's regime in Russia as the Chicago boys were to the Allende regime in Chile. Basically, Professor Jeffrey Sachs oversaw the plunging of the Russian economy under Boris Yeltsin back to the Stone Age. Jeffrey Sachs is is widely suspected in Russia, as one journalist put it, as an emissary of either Satan or the CIA. And Jeffrey Sachs has responded with disgust and indignation at that speculation. But his situation is viewed very suspiciously and by far more than just people in Russia. Jeffrey Sachs is not only a top economic advisor, or has been a top economic advisor to Bernie Sanders. He is a member of the Sanders Institute. He also is a top economic advisor to AOC. We've dealt with him in the past, and specifically in For the Record 953. Doug Henwood, last name H-E-N-W-O-O-D, he is an economic researcher who has a program on Pacific Radio, and also is the editor of the Left Business Observer had an article about Jeffrey Sachs in the Left Business Observer of August of 2005. The Long, Strange Career of Jeffrey Sachs by Doug Henwood. Sachs was an advisor to the Yeltsin government in Russia from 1991 to 1994, and also advised Poland, Slovenia, and Estonia as they were beginning their transition to capitalism. And skipping down, Russia was a thorough disaster, one of the worst collapses in human history. Living standards fell and the population shrank, an almost unprecedented event in a country not at war. U2 singer Bono's new best friend refuses to accept any blame for the disaster, offering the defense that the Russians didn't take his advice and the West didn't come through with the big aid package he insisted was necessary. Apparently, this is a well-practiced strategy. A 1992 Euromoney profile notes, quote, Sachs is reluctant to acknowledge mistakes, defining them in terms of regret when governments do not take his advice, unquote. In that case, he blamed Poland for not privatizing fast enough. Contrasting with Sachs's regrets over advice not taken, several governments he's consulted with have since characterized the material produced by him and his associates as irrelevant, or as a Slovenian official put it at the time, simplistic kindergarten stuff. But the outcome illustrates precisely the danger of having the likes of Sachs parachute in bearing the timeless truths of neoclassical economics. Anyone who knew Russia knew that any rapid privatization would immediately lead to the creation of a new corrupt elite through massive theft of state property. Anyone who knew Washington knew that no big aid package was ever going to come through, adding to usual U.S. cheapness. A lot of hardliners wanted to see Russia, beginning again, actually. Anyone who knew Washington knew that no big aid package was ever going to come through. Adding to usual U.S. cheapness, a lot of hardliners wanted to see Russia ground into the dirt. In the words of former World Bank economist David Ellerman, E-L-L-E-R-M-A-N, who frequently collided with Sachs's work in Slovenia and has followed him intently ever since, quote, only the mixture of American triumphalism and the academic arrogance of neoclassical economics could produce such a lethal dose of gall. During what officialdom called the transition, there were divisions between those who wanted to reform the existing socialist system and experiment with hybrid forms of ownership, and what Ellerman calls the clean post-socialist revolutionaries, unquote, many of them with American economics PhDs, who dismissed the reformers as tainted nomenclatura and wanted immediate privatization. Adding to the prestige of the revolutionaries were their trusted foreign advisors, like those from the Harvard Institute for International Development, or HIID, led by Jeffrey Sachs and partly funded by the U.S. government. HIID eventually collapsed in scandal when it was revealed that the principals of its Russian project, Andrei Schlieffer and Jonathan Hay, along with their wives, who happened to be mutual fund managers, had been buying Russian stocks and bickering for the privilege of getting the country's first mutual fund license while dispensing advice to the Russian government. Schlieffer was one of the trinity of the so-called Harvard Wunderkinder who were to Russia what the Chicago boys were to Pinochet's Chile. The other two were Lawrence Summers and Sachs. And Ben talks about how the HIID eventually collapsed in scandal. In this article, too, Doug Henwood notes one Russian journalist, and this will be in the written description for the show, noted one Russian journalist's observation that Sachs was, quote, an emissary either of the CIA or Satan. And again, as I said in our previous program, I don't believe in the existence of Satan. This does not necessarily prove obviously that he is CIA, but certainly his CV does fit very nicely in the context of CIA-financed academicians in major national security-connected institutions like Harvard University, and they have many very strong connections to the national security establishment. And one of the things that I have noted in connection with Jeffrey Sachs's work is that he basically parachuted in, along with his fellow HIIB people, into the former Soviet Union after the Free Congress Foundation, which basically projected the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Organization shared by former ABN, not ABN, but Arrowcross liaison officer Laszlo Pastor to Adolf Hitler. Laszlo Pastor was the head of the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, which, as we looked at in For the Record 1149 and 1150, was a direct projection of the Third Reich and its intelligence system into our own and the GOP at the same time. Then after the Free Congress Foundation under Paul Weyrich and Laszlo Pastor had projected these elements back into the Soviet Union, and there is an article, the Free Congress Foundation Goes East, co-authored by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf from Covert Action Information Bulletin, or Covert Action Quarterly, number 35, that goes into this. I will have that in the written description for the Record program number 1158. Again, I think it is very interesting that Jeffrey Sachs, who, although he will be looking at the wider effects of the pandemic, for him to be in this, basically the wider Lancet COVID-19 commission, a man with no economic or scientific credentials whatsoever, but someone who is viewed with great suspicion, I suspect, accurate suspicion by the Russian people for what he did there, his inclusion in this commission, along with Peter Bezak, who has more connections than a switchboard, as we have seen, I think is very, very interesting and, frankly, suspicious. It remains to be seen what their conclusions are. I would bet a vast sum of money that they will not say at all, yep, it looks like this was, the virus was crafted, in American sponsored programs. I don't know if they will say, yep, it looks like it escaped from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That is what the American right and people like Mike Pompeo and Donald Trump are saying. It remains to be seen, but my guess is that they will come up with, yep, this is a natural virus. Again, one of the points that we made in For the Record 1156 in connection with the EcoHealth Alliance program is that generally when viruses are studied in laboratories, they are frozen with nitrogen to keep them stable and inactive. So remains to be seen how a virus could have escaped. Anyway, we will see what the commission comes up with. I'll guarantee you they won't say, yep, looks like the U.S. made this virus. I don't think they'll say, yep, the Chinese made this virus. Well, I'll have to wait and see. I think they'll say, yep, it's natural. But that all will be in the future. This concludes For the Record program number 1158, BioSci Apocalypse Now, Part 18, An Ounce of Prevention, Part 3, being recorded on October 25th of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.